Welcome to this Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, episode number 30. On Sunday the 26th of March 2006, I visited the Photo Imaging Expo, or PAI 2006, at the Tokyo Big Sight International Exhibition Center. In this episode, I'm going to relay some thoughts on the visit, basically on what I wanted to get from it. I'm thinking of investing in a new Epson printer, for example, and I wanted to talk to someone about my options. I also watched the Adobe Lightroom public beta 2 demonstration and was very impressed. Before leaving, I attended a seminar about digital nature photography by Yoshiaki Kobayashi, one of the top nature photographers here in Japan. This is the guy that I was lucky enough to visit Hokkaido with in February, and I also did four podcasts about that from episode 25 to 28. There are also a few other snippets of information in this week's episode, but I'm not going to give an in-depth report of the whole show. As the title of the episode says, this would be just my impressions, backed up by around 10 images. Also, before we get into today's main topic, I'd like to mention a new method of listening to these podcasts that I hope will make at least some of you happy. I often receive comments from people asking why I don't do enhanced podcasts. These are the ones that have chapters and you change the thumbnail image for you in iTunes. And until now, I've not been able to do chaptered podcasts because Apple has not released a piece of software that they call the Chapter Tool for Windows. And I don't have any other good reason to give up all of my Windows software and switch to the Mac OS. Last week, though, I bought into a piece of technology called the Poo-Poo Player. Poo-Poo Player Pro, this is. And despite the name, this is not a tool to allow you to play poo-poo, although I'm sure it'll do a great job of that if you tune into another podcast. Basically what it is it allows me to change the images being displayed at set times, pretty much the same as an enhanced podcast. It also allows you to stream the podcast from my podcast page or from my website so that you don't have to wait for the file to download. This will still not work the same as an enhanced podcast in iTunes or on your iPod, but once you've clicked the new Stream Podcast button that you can see above the Download button for each episode on my podcast page now, you will see a small window open and the episode you choose will start playing in just moments as the rest of the audio file starts to be streamed down to your computer. You will need Adobe Flash, the Adobe Flash Player, for this to work, but this is available for free and can be downloaded automatically if you don't already have it. Once the audio is playing, you will see the images in the bottom right of the player change as I move to the next one. And so all you have to do to view that is to just click the image. And so this really is just like enhanced podcasts in iTunes, but you will be using a different tool. The difference is, again, that the image will be opened on my website rather than in a separate window. You will also be able to go back to the older chapters, to the older episodes, sorry. I'm going to be slowly adding the chapter information to the older episodes of this podcast as well. So as time progresses, you'll be able to go back and select the older ones and use the tool to listen to those and select the chapters or the images for the chapters as they progress. Although the player is quite small, it's relatively feature rich as well. It includes a list of all podcasts to date once it's open, so you don't need to come back to the podcast page to reselect, and you can just go in and select any of those from the list. It has buttons to jump to the next or the previous podcasts. It's got a volume control and timeline scrubber, things like that as well. And it's totally advertisement free because I paid for it. So I hope that you find this useful, a useful new addition to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Okay, so on to today's main topic. As I mentioned in the intro, on Sunday the 26th of March 2006, I visited the Photo Imaging Expo, or PI 2006, at the Tokyo Big Sight International Exhibition Centre. Today's photographs are more just for information, so I won't be giving details on how or why I made the images as usual, or for most of them at least. If you've started listening to this podcast with the Poo Poo Player, you will now see the image in the window of the player has changed to one of the Tokyo Big Sight. If you want to carry on using the method of clicking the thumbnails on the podcast page, that's fine. And if you want to enter the number into my website as usual, this one is number 945. I shot the building in the morning on arriving to let you get an idea of what the place looks like. But this shot was actually one that I captured before getting on the train to go home at 2:15 p.m. The sun was around the front of the building by this time, so it just makes for a better photo. The Tokyo Big Sight, as in that sight as in to see, rather than sight as in a venue, is built in an area of Tokyo that I heard called reclaimed land when this area of Japan was discussed in a documentary that I saw recently on, I think, the Discovery Channel. I personally prefer the term landfill, though, as I've never quite understand this reclaimed land term. It kind of suggests that we once owned that land in the past, maybe billions of years ago when we still lived in the ocean. It might have been our home, but since we gave up our gills in favour of lungs, I find reclaiming the ocean as our own a somewhat strange concept. Anyhow, basically the whole city here with the futuristic Yurikamome railway system that runs on a road-like track with rubber tyres rather than steel rails, the sewage works that looks like a giant UFO, and also houses a health club, I think they were saying, with tennis courts. There's amusement parks here and even the Fuji Television Company building with a large silver sphere embedded in what looks like a lot of scaffolding. It's all built on the landfill ground, and it actually makes quite a difference walking around these wide streets and open spaces compared to most of Tokyo, which is often quite cramped and crowded. If you register beforehand, as I did, entrance fee to the expo was 750 yen, or about $6.50. This gets you a free photography-related equipment catalogue that covers everything photography, including studio lighting and photo frames, camera bags, and other gadgetry, just about anything related to photography, in addition to, of course, the entrance fee. Once inside, as I walked into the main area, the KFC booth caught my eye with the large LowPro sign. As some of you will know, I use LowPro bags with the slip lock lens cases and pouches that you can add on to the side, to little hoops and things on the side. I use this equipment almost religiously to carry my camera gear around. And I was interested to see the dry zone bag that you could see, that you can should now be able to see in the next picture, in the flash player, the poo-poo player. I think I'm going to have to start calling it a flash player. The photo number for this one is 946. The bag was sitting in the well of an artificial waterfall and with water dropping directly on it. This was easily the amount of water that you'd get from a heavy rainstorm. But the bag, when opened, was totally dry. All of my current bags my LowPro camera bags are showerproof, and they also come with all-weather covers that you pull out of a pouch and slip over the bag when it starts to rain hard, So I probably won't be replacing my own bags for these, even if they had the same range. But if I was in the market for a new camera bag, this Lowepro Dry Zone would. I think there's currently three in the series. They would definitely be on my short list of considerations. By the way, I'll drop a list of links for all of the companies, or the majority of the companies that I talk about the gear of, into the show notes for today. I won't be putting in the Canon and the Nikon websites, as I'm sure you're already very acquainted with those. Next, I approach the Epson stand. You can see this in the next image, which is number 947. You can also get a feel for the numbers in attendance to the expo today. I came to this expo last year too, on the Saturday though, not the Sunday, and I got a distinct feeling that there were more people here then. Most booths today look very similar to this, a good number of visitors, but not particularly crowded. When I set out for today's expo, there was one thing that I expressly wanted to get out of today, and this was also discussed in the in a forum topic recently, but I wanted to see output from both the Epson MaxArt PX5500 printer that uses the K3 inks and the Colario PX-G5100 printer. These printers that I believe in the West are called the Epson Stylus Photo R1800 and the R2400 respectively, both output prints up to A3 plus or 13 by 19 inch paper. The R1800's list price on Epson's website, I think it was, is $549, and the R2400 is $849.99. So there's quite a difference in price. The thing is that the R2400 has the ability to create much richer archival quality black and white prints. The R1800, on the other hand, produces wonderful high gloss prints. Now, I was worried about how good the colour gloss output was from the R2400, as I would like to invest in this printer, but for its superior black and white. But most of the original prints that I sell from my site are colour, and some of which are gloss, so I can't accept lower quality than what I'm currently getting from my PM 4000PX, or the Stylus Photo 1280, as I believe it's called in the West. So, as you can see in the next photo, number 948, I was pleased to see that Epson had provided a wall full of photos from the glossiest of gloss to the mattiest of matte output from both printers for me to compare. That's not quite true, as the highest gloss paper from Epson is not supported for use with the R2400, so it was not available for comparison. But I was able to see that the R2400 does indeed create better black and white shots, and at the same time, I could tell that it keeps a very high quality in the colour prints. I, for one, could not really tell the difference between the output from both printers when it comes to colour, and I'm not too worried about being able to output the highest gloss, as most prints, when viewed in a frame, for example, under glass, are better if the gloss is held back just a tad. So I think I've just about made my mind up to go for the R2400 or the MaxArt PX5500, as they call it in Japan, before too very long. In the next shot, number 949, we can see the Canon booth, and maybe we should call it a campus. The area that Canon took up was huge. I guess they're just making too much money, which is not surprising with the amount of cash that people like me throw at them each year. I first had a chat with one of the guys showing Digital Photo Professional. I wanted to talk about the fact that Canon's new picture styles information is not transferred to the Adobe Camera Raw correctly, and I was a little disappointed by the defensive attitude of the Canon guy. He didn't seem very concerned about the real issues that the photographer has in not being able to simply open his or her raw images in the ACR and have the picture style recognized and applied, and seemed more concerned about the dangers of making picture style attributes or code public. I said that I agree that simply making it something similar to open source would not be a good idea, but I think that there should be some way for Adobe to, or other companies for that matter, to work with the picture style. It was at this point that the guy said that Adobe still didn't recognize EXIF data in digital images. And when I said, of course they do, he said, yes, but only for the last few versions. It was at this point when I realized that I was wasting my time talking with this guy, so I thanked him for his time and walked away. In shot number 950, up next, we can see the crowd gathered around the EOS digital stand on the Canon booth. Much of the fuss was over the 30D, soon to hit the market, but there was also a lot of attention still being given to the 5D and the 1D series DSLRs. We can also see a row of super telephoto lenses being explored at the top of this image, behind the EOS digital stand. I remember drooling over the 500 and 600mm f4s at this point last year, but I was lucky enough to pick up the 600mm f4 last December, so I didn't bother to go up there and take a look today. All in all, there was a lot of buzz around the Canon stand. They had an area for consumer point-and-shoot digital cameras, as well as the DSLRs. It was also possible to take a look at Canon's printer lineup, video technology, and their digital projectors, etc. I was also interested in attending one of the seminars at the far right of the Canon area, but we'll get to that a little later. I next walked to the stand opposite the Canon stand, which was the Adobe stand, and I was just in time to watch the Lightroom Public Beta 2 demonstration, which I am very impressed with, very interested in. I sat down and waited a moment for the show to start. You should now be able to see a shot from shortly after the demonstration started if you're listening with the new Flash Player, or go to shot number 951 if you're following on my website. The demonstration was incredibly professional, as one would expect from a company like Adobe. When switching between parts of the demo, there was a video with like hundreds of photos flashing around the screen, almost dancing as though they were choreographed to the music. The screen that you can see in the photo is just half of the actual screen size used for the demo. You can probably tell it was really quite impressive. Things that I was impressed with Lightroom itself include the speed at which the operations were possible. I know that they probably have mountains of RAM and CPU speed in the computers that they were using for the demo, but even so, the motions were very fluid indeed. The raw images were viewable in no time. The switching between the viewing, the entire image to going to 100% and moving between the various screen modes was very fast too. I also like the grayscale mixer, which allows you to very accurately control the way your image looks in black and white using sliders for each color. I received a CD from the stand with a tutorial on there, and also the Mac version of the beta. But I, as you know, I'm basically a Windows user, so I really just can't wait for the Windows version of the Lightroom beta to become available so that I can have a play with it myself. Unfortunately, there will be no image to show you of the Apple stand, as Apple stopped me photographing it, saying that there were copyright issues with the photos on the screen, even though that they would have appeared probably no bigger than 50 pixels or so wide in my image. I'm not going to go into much detail of how I feel about this, and I do respect their views and, of course, other photographers' copyrights. And that's why I'm not going to show you or publish the one shot that I did get before they stopped me. But I will say that I was disappointed, and I don't quite understand the marketing strategy behind spending all of this money setting up a stall, pretty impressive stall, at a trade show like this, and then denying people the chance to give you free advertising. After this, I had a walk through the rest of the expo, and along the way made image number 952 that you should now be able to see. This is probably one of the shots from the day that I really thought about from an artistic perspective. Although through the expo there were, you know, all the way through, at most stalls there are models posing for almost invariably an entirely male crowd. If I was interested in portrait photography, I would probably be at the front of the crowd anyway, so I can't really say that I find anything particularly wrong in this, but I just find it interesting, and I wanted to show you the sort of scene that I was looking at. I walked up to the SanDisk compact flash memory stand, which I must say again was very impressive, focusing on their fastest card technology to date, the Extreme 3 cards. And as I raised my camera, the model with the hat on here looked directly at me. The eye contact in this shot makes for a little bit of an interesting image, I thought. But I purposely included all of the guys there with their cameras up shooting away as well. I walked right through the expo to the the farthest point from the Canon booths, and there I found the Nikon guys. This photo, image number 953, gives a view of the side of the Nikon booth. Don't be fooled by the lack of people in this shot. I waited quite some time to get just a few people in the shot, and was quite pleased to see the guy in the far right peeking around the corner somewhat in a sinister fashion. And also he was like following the guy in the hat walking across the center of the frame. I quite like the high key display cabinets here as well, with all of the lenses in there. It just adds a little bit more to the shot. I guess this and the last shot, I was kind of thinking about the artistic side of what I was doing. But, you know, that I think this is about it for today. The inside of the booth here was, of course, teeming with photographers trying to get what for most would probably be the first look at the new D200. And, you can see that D200 plastered across the side of the booth here. After this, I wandered outside. I ate lunch that I'd picked up on my way out here. There are places to buy food inside, but I recalled last year that I was so overwhelmed by all the camera equipment and goodies inside that I felt it a waste of time actually stopping and spending time finding somewhere to eat and then queuing to buy it. So I think I also recall that by the time I decided to do so last year, much of the food was sold out, so I brought my own lunch today. I spent just a few minutes outside before going back inside and going to the upper floor of the exhibition centre to look around the stands up there. This floor is where the smaller companies congregate, and I didn't find anything really that interesting, or at least not to the point where I was personally interested in it, so I didn't spend so much time up there. By the time I'd looked around, it was time to go back down to the Canon stand and listen to the seminar from one of the top nature photographers here in Japan that I mentioned earlier. I was lucky enough to visit Hokkaido with him on his photography tour in February this year. This was the photography tour that I spoke about extensively in episode 25 to 28 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. In the last photo for today, number 954, we can see the person I'm talking about. Yoshiaki Kobayashi is his name. He's talking to a crowded room about digital nature photography. Kobayashi Sensei said a number of things that I find rang very true, like using a tripod whenever possible, especially for macro photography, and when you really can't shoot in bursts to increase your chances of getting something that works. But I really wanted to mention one thing in particular that I also feel very strongly about. He said that just because with the advent of digital photography and it now being very easy to correct exposure in post-processing, there's no excuse for not getting it right when you are shooting the original. I, too, really want to stress the importance of doing this. Many people think that now that we can change things in post-processing that we don't have to be as careful as when we shot with film. Let me tell you, though, that pretty much every piece of post-processing you do is going to be destructive. And if you don't get the exposure right at the point of shooting the image, sure, you can raise it or lower it in your RAW software or in Photoshop, but the quality of the image will be reduced. I have tweaked the exposure myself on the odd occasion when I just didn't have anything better. So I'm not saying that you should never do this, but you will get higher quality results more consistently if you pay attention to the fundamental photographic skills at the time of shooting, rather than messing around with your shots in post-processing. I think I mentioned it was either on the forum or in a podcast recently as well, that I personally prefer spending my time, you know, actually getting out and making photographs rather than sitting in front of my computer playing around with them. So that's enough. Finish with the rant. I just wanted to wrap it up for today now. I'll include a link to Kobayashi Sensei's website in the show notes too. I have so much respect for this guy and his work and his vision, so please drop by his website and take a look for yourself. Finally today, I'd like to thank those of you that have taken the time to complete the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast listeners survey so far. If you haven't already completed the survey and you can spare 5 minutes, you can find a link to the survey in the small podcast section on the top page, or linked with a larger graphic on the podcast page. I've also posted an announcement in the forum about this with a link, so I'll put a link to that post in the show notes too. I'd really appreciate it if you could just take the 5 minutes to complete the survey, as it will enable me to learn more about you and hopefully help me to find a sponsor for the podcast at some point. So whatever you're doing this week, I hope you have a great time doing it, and keep shooting. Bye-bye.